A lot of disadvantaged people want to pass the pilot's test for the opportunities it affords them. But for me, it was expected. My parents have a lot of connections, a lot of social power, I guess. And to maintain the empire, I had to be a pilot.
That makes sense, I said. You have to prove you are the best.
They didn't want me to stay and prove it, Arturo said. I nearly got killed when I was a cadet. My parents pulled strings, got me my pin early so I wouldn't have to keep flying.
But you are flying.
Yeah, Arturo said. My parents weren't happy about it. Neither was my girlfriend. They all felt like I'd done my part. But I hadn't, you know? I hated the thought of slinking back to the caverns and benefiting from the deaths of my friends, people I knew and liked. It felt like cowardice, hiding when I should be out there fighting.
He shook his head. Is that why you're... Jorgen didn't like it when I used this word. I don't think there's an exact translation for it in my language, but your mate...
My girlfriend, Arturo said. Yeah. That's why she broke up with me, ultimately. I think she wanted to for a while, but she didn't feel like she could. Like, it doesn't feel good to give up on someone who's fighting for the future of humanity. But she'd always thought I was going to come back a few months after flight school. And then I didn't.
I'm sorry, I said.
It's okay. I think we're both better off, honestly. She said I'd changed, that I didn't care about the things I used to.
He shrugged.
She was probably right.
Given how deeply he seemed to care about his people's freedom now, I thought that could only be a good thing, but I wondered if he would agree. We're on the same side, I said. As long as you want to fight the superiority, you don't have to worry about me.
Same to you, he said. Jorgen gets hung up on rules, but he doesn't want to play nice with them any more than you and I do.
I believed him. I couldn't be absolutely sure he was telling the truth, but he had the same problem with me. Regardless, once we got everything in order, we were all going to find out. I worried it would be uncomfortable to sleep on the platform, but my brother and the Independence pilots had found the bunk rooms from when the platform was inhabited. There was an entire block of them, more rooms than we could possibly need. The Independence pilots took up residence in one, and Rinnakeen's family and some of the other refugees spread out over a few more. The rooms had obviously been used by salvagers in recent years, because the old cushioning had been replaced on all but the top bunks, where it was mostly disintegrated. The other bunks weren't as soft or as clean as I would have liked, but they were better than sleeping in the cockpits. The human men all settled into one of the sleeping rooms and the women into another, where they invited me to join them. In one of the adjoining common rooms, Kimmelin and Sadie divided the algae strips and custard so that everyone got a portion for dinner. I passed on the algae. Since we knew the nut wafers were safe for me to eat, I choked a couple down. I could have gone to eat with my brother, but instead I stayed with the humans. I needed to make sure they didn't have any second thoughts about what we were doing here, and besides that, I was starting to enjoy their company.
You can have a cup of custard to dip those nut bars in if you want,
Kimmelin said, passing the jug of liquid in my direction. I peered at the cloudy white substance. What is it?
It's milk, Sadie told me, but like old milk, I think. I'm not totally clear how they make it.
Human milk? I asked.
Ew, no, Sadie said. Cow's milk, I think.
That sounded disgusting. I'm all right, I said, though I think Happy will take my portion. The slug was leaning out of Kimmelin's sling, dangling down like it was going to dip its face right into the jug.
Happy,
Kimmelin said. Yours is over here. She pulled the slug out of the sling and deposited it with the others, who were happily chewing algae strips. Jorgen approached. FM and Rig hadn't joined us. Last I'd seen, she was sitting with Rig in the hangar while he worked on my ship, both of them speaking in low voices.
Can I ask for your help with something?
Jorgen asked me. Yes, I said. And we walked out into a hallway with a long window looking out into the miasma. Jorgen pressed his fingers against the glass, watching the miasma swirl against it.
Since we have a minute, I was wondering if you could teach me something about cytonics.
Of course, I said, and I took a seat on the floor of the hallway, my back opposite the window. The outline of Hollow was dimly visible, its dark branches reaching up toward the red sky.
Gran-Gran taught me how to meditate,
Jorgen said,
to listen to the stars. It helped, but I didn't end up hearing the stars. I heard the Tanix instead.
That sounds ultimately more useful, I said.
It probably was. But Spensa was able to hyperjump all the way to Starsight.
Technically, all cytonics have every power, I said. I'm not clear on how many there are. We're only able to manifest some of them deliberately after a lot of training, and some we may never be able to use. Of the five cytonics on Redon, I'm the only one who has been able to hyperjump.
Which is why the other cytonics weren't able to follow us here immediately, even before we got the inhibitor up,
Jorgen said.
And if I'm never going to be able to learn...
That's what I'm trying to tell you, I said. There are other valuable types of cytonics. Mind blades are supposed to be the most difficult. I've never been able to manifest those.
You said those are like little bits of the nowhere that cut like razor blades?
Yes, I said. Like your boom slug.
Boom slug,
Boom Slug said from Jorgen's shoulder.
I haven't been able to do that either,
Jorgen said. Let's start with what's already working, I said. You know how to find my mind and the minds of the Tanix. Can you do it now? Jorgen absently stroked Boom Slug on its spines. He closed his eyes, and I could feel his mind reaching out toward mine. Good. Now reach out farther. Stretch yourself over the space of the planet. See if you can find the Unity cytonics. Now that you have the key to the inhibitor, you should be able to find them.
It's easier when I'm closer to the source,
Jorgen said.
When I heard the Tanix below the surface of Detritus, there were so many of them, so it was louder.
Try, Jorgen, I said. Stop focusing so much on what you aren't able to do and try. I felt his presence in my mind as he reached out.
I hate this,
Jorgen said.
I can't do enough.
There you go, I said. You can reach me. Now try to find others. And be quieter while you do it. They don't know yet who you are, and we don't want to give them that information unless it benefits us to do so.
You heard that?
Jorgen said. He sounded embarrassed.
I didn't mean to send what I was thinking.
You have to be careful not to broadcast when you're making contact, I said. But now, try the meditation you learned before. Instead of reaching from my mind, reach out into the negative realm that surrounds us, out across the planet. Jorgen was quiet for a long time, while Boom Slug tucked itself in the crook of his elbow and snored softly. After a while, I thought Jorgen might have fallen asleep sitting up.
I can feel the other Tanix,
Jorgen said finally.
I can't find any other cytonics. And there's a space somewhere in the distance, a space that feels solid, like I can't reach into it.
I followed him across the miasma. Yes, there it was. On the far side of the core, on the side of the planet in a night cycle. The council tree, I said, inhibited by the other cytonics. I wondered if they'd done that as a precaution once our inhibitor went up. They wouldn't be able to maintain it all the time, but they must be worried about what we had planned. They wanted us to believe they were in control, but they were still afraid of us, which meant they weren't, not entirely.
I need to learn how to make those inhibitors,
Jorgen said. You learned how to find a place that's been inhibited, I said. You might be happy for that first.
It's not enough,
Jorgen said. I understood what he meant. It would never be enough until the fight was over and his people were safe. I felt the same. Focus on what you have, I said. We can work on it more, but I think you should sleep first. Tiring yourself out will only make you more frustrated, And when you're frustrated, it's much more difficult to learn. And dangerous, if you start manifesting things like concussion bolts and mind blades. Jorgen didn't argue.
That makes sense. Thanks, Alanique.
Now I felt inadequate. Jorgen and his team had risked everything to help me, and I'd hardly shown him anything.
It's not enough, he'd said.
I knew exactly how he felt. Get some rest, I said.
Good night,
Jorgen said. And he left me staring up into the red-violet glow of the sun against the miasma above. Chapter 17. I had a hard time following my own advice, and so I spent a good portion of the sleep cycle lying awake, listening. Sometime while the humans were all asleep, I caught a communication traveling through the negative realm.
Everything in hand,
Quillan was saying.
Give us time. Retrieve Alanique. Give us the rogue Cytonic and her allies. If that proves difficult for you, set up a government who can.
I drew a deep breath. Quillan was still trying to pacify the superiority, but he had a storm in a bottle, and any moment the glass might break. He was holding them off for now, but if they grew tired of waiting, we were going to pay the price. We had to make our move tomorrow, with whatever resources we had to work with. I woke in the morning unsure of how much sleep I'd actually gotten, though I was still glad we'd taken the time to rest. Tired pilots were sloppy pilots, and sloppy pilots lost matches. Or in this case, got themselves killed. While the humans were eating, I used the radio in Jorgen's ship to check the frequency Nanalise had used to broadcast the message from Rinnakeen. It was a unity channel, one they often used to send messages to their people, despite superiority admonitions that we keep wireless communication to a minimum. I wondered how long that would last once they gave the superiority more influence over Redon. I wondered if they would regret it. There was no broadcast now, but there was a repeating message about an upcoming special conversation between Rinnakeen and one of the most popular Unity orators later in the morning. That was good. If Rinnakeen was broadcasting, I could use that signal to find his location. They would unintentionally lead me right to him. When everyone finished eating, I followed the humans to the control room with the Tanix boxes. Rig, Jorgen, FM, and I gathered in the room while the others waited outside. None of your people died in the night, I said to Jorgen. So I suppose the Udall nuts weren't toxic to you.
You only say that because you didn't have to share a room with Ned last night, Jorgen said. All right, Rig said. I've finished reassembling Alanique's ship, and I found the shield systems. They're similar to the ones on Platform Prime, so I was able to get them working. I don't think it's as effective as the planetary shield, because we don't have hundreds of other platforms to form a barrier. But look.
He gestured out the window at a bluish tint now coloring the miasma.
That's something,
Jorgen said.
Good work.
I wondered how much sleep Rig had gotten, but he didn't complain.
We expect we know how the comms and navigation systems work, he said. They should be similar to the hypercoms and hyperdrives we already use. But we want to check out this unknown Cytonic weapon system, and then make a plan for how to use the platform to fight back.
Rig and I were thinking that Boomslug might be the right type to put in a weapon system, FM said, given what we've seen him do. Jorgen knelt to gently pick up Boomslug, who was lying in the doorway to the control room.
You ready, buddy?
Buddy,
Boomslug said in its deep voice.
Okay, Rig said. It would be really nice to have a weapon system we can control.
FM took Boomslug from Jorgen and put him into the box. I am going to give you so much caviar if this works, she said.
If we have to experiment on him, Jorgen said. I'm glad he's inside a metal box where he hopefully can't hurt us.
I was pretty sure mind blades could pass through most substances and do damage as they went, but I didn't tell Jorgen that. If the former inhabitants of this platform had put a Tanix in this box and then used it to power weapons, presumably they hadn't cut themselves to ribbons in the process.
All right, Rig said when the box was locked. Let's see what he can do. What am I going to ask it?
Jorgen said.
Please attack nothing?
Go boom, FM said.
You remember what that felt like, right?
Jorgen winced.
Too well.
Can you aim the gun? I asked. We're a long ways from Hollow, but we don't know exactly how far this weapon can reach.
She's right, Rig said. The Superiority had planetary weapons. This could be one of those. I didn't see anything on this platform as big as that was, but I didn't exactly perform an exhaustive search, and I'll try to focus away from the tree, Jorgen said, out in the miasma, the same way I do when I direct them to hyperjump. Anyone else have any concerns?
We were all quiet.
Okay,
Jorgen said.
Here goes.
I focused on the mind of the slug, trying not to make enough contact that I would distract it from Jorgen's message, but just enough that I could feel the change. I didn't need to, though. The whole platform quivered with the reverberation, like a weapon had fired with incredible force. Out the window, the miasma in front of us shifted, swirling in eddies around invisible projectiles.
Scud! Ned shouted from outside. What was that?
Mind blades, I said. Did they aim where you wanted them to go?
They did,
Jorgen said.
We still have no idea how powerful that weapon is. It moved the gas clouds around, but that doesn't mean—
A well-placed mind blade can cut right through a ship's hull, I said.
That seems like something we can use to defend ourselves,
Rig said.
Though I worry we'll have already drawn attention by using it.
A plan began to form in my mind. Drawing attention might be a good thing, though, I said. If we were to move the platform and activate the weapons, Unity would want to stop you.
That's true,
Jorgen said.
They'd send forces after us.
But they wouldn't be able to get past the auto turrets quickly, I said. That kind of operation requires a lot of drones and a lot of patience, and that's if they could get through the shield. They'd want to send Unity's cytonics to stop you.
What good are cytonics if we have an inhibitor up?
FM asked. They'd still be able to affect us, I said. The inhibitor prevents cytonics without the key from using their powers from within the field. The other cytonics could still surround us and put up an inhibitor field of their own, preventing us from using the cytonic weapons or hyperjumping out, essentially trapping us.
We'd still have the auto turrets and the shield to defend us,
Jorgen said. Yes, I said, but they can also magnify each other's abilities. Quillan can use his cytonic powers to knock people out with a concussion bolt. It's what he did to me before I crashed your ship. The other cytonics can help him amplify it, creating a concussion field similar to the way they join their minds together in an inhibitor. They've done it before during political protests. They said they were quelling riots, trying to keep things peaceful, but knocking people out en masse always seemed violent to me.
Why haven't they done that to us already?
FM asked. I imagine they're planning to, I said, but it wouldn't let them get inside the shield. And it's not easy to do. They'd have to surround the platform and maintain more or less the same positions while they do it. It's not very applicable in an actual battle where the enemy ships can chase you out of formation.
So we'd need ships in the air,
Jorgen said,
making sure they can't get into formation to inhibit us or use the concussion field. We could tempt the other cytonics away from Rinnakeen, which would make it easier for you to rescue him.
Right, I said. Even if they had Rinnakeen inside a Tanix-powered inhibitor, I'd still have a better chance of rescuing him without the other cytonics to contend with.
What exactly are we going to do to get their attention, though?
FM asked.
It'll take more than just firing the hyperweapon into the miasma.
Is there some Unity base we could fire on?
Jorgen said.
We don't want to hit civilian targets, but if we could hit a military one.
The idea of actually firing a mindblade weapon, even at a Unity target, was horrifying to me. I don't want to kill anyone unless we have to, I said.
Sure,
Jorgen said.
We could wait for them to fire first.
But there will be a lot of Unity people on their base who aren't firing at us, I said, and I don't want to shoot at them. The humans stared at me for a moment, like they could accept this, but didn't quite understand it. They'd been at war their whole lives and were willing to make sacrifices I wasn't ready for. I acted like I was hardened to the consequences, but I'd never killed anyone. I'd mostly shot people with tagging lasers. Most of my time in starships had been spent playing games. What if we moved the platform into the miasma outside the Unity headquarters on Tower? I asked. It's a tree with a huge population, so I don't want to fire on it. But just being there would feel like a threat to Unity, more than any other tree but the Council tree. We can't threaten that one, because we need to draw the Cytonics farther away so I can go and get Rinnakeen if they leave him behind. But you don't have to shoot at the tree. Just hyperjump there. Maybe fire a warning shot with the hyperweapon into the miasma.
That's a better idea,
Jorgen said.
You're right. We don't want to hurt anyone we don't have to.
Good, I said. Meanwhile, I could go in and get Rinnakeen, since he'd be relatively unguarded.
Unless they bring him with them, FM said.
They might, I said. But if they bring him to us, we can pivot the plan, and I can come back to rescue him from their ships.
You shouldn't go alone,
Jorgen said.
There are too many things that could go wrong with the plan, and you'd need backup.
I'll be stealthier alone, I said.
But we work as a team,
Jorgen insisted, sparing a glance at FM.
You need someone there if things go wrong. At very least, that person could engage their Tanix to come back here and tell us what's happened to you, so we can organize a rescue effort.
It was a good sign that they would consider rescuing me if something went wrong.
I'll have to stay here to communicate with the slugs in the platform,
Jorgen continued,
and Rig will need to stay too, but I'll go,
Arturo said from the doorway. I looked at him. Yesterday, it had seemed like he was starting to trust me, but here he was, volunteering to come along and babysit me. To make sure that I wasn't going to have his people make a spectacle out of themselves and then grab Rinnakeen and run. I could do that, I realized. Arturo's presence wouldn't stop me. But the whole point of going to Detritus in the first place was to find allies. Even if the rest of their people were making a different choice, these humans were still willing to work with me. So far, anyway. Jorgen nodded.
That makes the most sense. Maybe you should take Ned as well.
Alanik is right, Arturo said.
The more people we bring, the less stealthy we are. But if we're going into combat with a ship with a Cytonic inhibitor, we'll want at least two of us. If we find that it's being guarded by a whole fleet, we can hyperjump back and regroup. But at least we'll know more than we know now.
All right,
Jorgen said. We're going to need to get everyone together and talk this through. Alanik, would you go talk to the Independence pilots? See if they'll join us. We could meet in the hangar. It's the only space we found so far that is big enough to fit all of us together comfortably.
I nodded. I didn't like putting any of them in danger. But if we succeeded, it would be worth it. Chapter 18. An hour later, Rig, Jorgen, and I gathered in the control room again to use the hyperdrive. The other pilots, both human and Urdale, were already in their ships to be transported out to defend the platform. Rig had pulled the radio out of the wreckage of my ship and installed it in the control room so he'd be able to talk to us once we were in the air.
Here we go,
Jorgen said, as Rig deposited Drape in the navigation system Tanix box.
At least we've used hyperdrives before. Do we think this works the same way as the ones in our ships? I'll just send it a location and the whole platform will move.
The Superiority move massive ships with hyperdrives,
I said, so this platform shouldn't be a problem.
I only know how to send the slugs to places we both know,
Jorgen said.
I don't know where we're going.
I can give it coordinates, I said. If we're going to tower, I want to be sure we're out of range of the tree so the auto turrets don't fire on it. I wasn't going to be responsible for that many civilian casualties, and not just because it would be impossible to convince my people we meant well after something like that.
Could you move the platform yourself?
Rig asked me.
It seems like you could do it without the help of the Tanix.
Maybe, I said, but I'd rather not risk it.
Plus, we should test it with the hyperdrive,
Jorgen said.
That way we know if it works, in case I need to pull us out after Alanik is gone.
He turned to me.
Do you know what kind of range the guns have?
I'm going to overestimate it, I said, just to be safe. We want the guns shooting at the people who come after us, not at Tower. We can always move the platform a second time if we need to. I searched out across the planet, reaching past Industry and Spindle, where I lived, to Tower. It was far from other trees at the moment, leaving many branches of space out in the miasma to move the platform. I needed it close enough to Tower that Unity saw it as a threat, but not so close that anyone got hurt, even aircraft who were passing through the busy airspace around the tree. Better to be too far out than too close. I chose a place farther away and impressed the coordinates into my mind. And then, reaching out for Drape, I fed them to him. Nothing happened. Why isn't it working? I asked.
He's not listening to you,
Jorgen said.
Probably because he doesn't know you.
That made sense. Most of the slugs back on Detritus hadn't come when I called them either. And those that had only did so because I'd promised them food and friends.
That's a good thing,
Rig said.
It means not all the slugs can be used against us in combat. You're going to have to give him the command,
Jorgen said to Rig. Rig bent down, speaking through the metal door of the box.
Go.
There was the slightest hesitation. And then, that horrible loss of control again, as I slipped into the negative realm without pulling myself through. I came back to where I was standing before, in the center of the control room. The window facing the miasma suddenly went dark.
Guys?
Kimmelin called from the direction of the hangar.
You need to come see this.
We all crowded out the door to the hangar. Pilots sat in their ships with their canopies open, looking out the enormous windows through the swirling miasma at the reaching branches of Tower, so named because it was the tallest of all the trees, long and lean, with branches that soared nearly straight upward into the sky. Here, there were almost no horizontal buildings, only spirals built into the sides of the branches, all illuminated with hundreds of thousands of city lights. The intricacies of the architecture were too tiny to see from this distance, but the overall effect was still impressive. I felt a little bit of pride at the way the humans gaped at it.
That's incredible,
Rig said.
I thought that other tree was impressive,
Arturo added. Hollow is a ruin, I said. This is Urdale civilization. All around, I could see the Independence pilot sitting taller. I was glad to see that I'd managed to place the platform far enough from the tree that the turrets weren't shooting at it. But we were close enough to be visible from the branches, so people had to be taking notice. Jorgen moved to his ship, fiddling with the radio. He picked up a channel talking about the weather patterns in the miasma, and then an air traffic control channel.
Obstacle in the airspace on the Duskward side. All flights avoid. Yeah,
Ned said.
They definitely noticed us.
What about the other Cytonics? FM asked. Jorgen closed his eyes, and I waited while he reached out across the negative space around Redon.
I can feel one of them,
he said.
Your friend, Quillan?
I followed his reach. He was right. Quillan was moving toward us. He'd moved so fast, he must have already been in a ship before we hyperjumped.
We've got their attention,
Jorgen said.
All ships, time to get in the air. We'll fly out of the hangar together. When we're all ready, we'll hyperjump everyone beyond the range of the auto turrets.
Canopies lowered, and ships lifted off the landing pad. Ned hung back, pulling his Tanix out of its box. We'd agreed that I should take a hyperdrive with me in case Arturo and I were separated, and Naga would be able to find Chubbs instantly. It would leave Ned without a hyperdrive in the battle, so he'd have to rely on his flightmates to pull him in and out with light lances, just like the Independence pilots.
Okay, buddy, Ned said. You're going for an adventure with the nice alien lady.
Ned, Arturo said, like he thought he might offend me. But when Ned handed over his Tanix, a hyperdrive, a creature so valuable most people in the universe would kill for it, I couldn't feel anything but awe. They were really going to let me take one. And yes, I knew it was only because they thought it would help them follow me if I tried to escape them, and it probably would. But still, I'd risked everything to find out the secret to these creatures, and now I was holding one in my hands. It looked up at me, its face quizzical.
Alien lady,
it trilled.
Get to your ship, Jorgen said to Ned. Let's go.
The rest of the flight was already maneuvering their ships out the hangar doors and onto the surface of the platform. I set Chubbs down in the space behind my seat, but moments later, he was nuzzling my ankles down by the pedals. I didn't relish the idea of his obstruction getting me shot down by the autofire, so I scooped him into my lap. How do they stand flying with you? I asked him.
Flying with you, Chubbs said.
The Tanix sounded like simple mimics, but they must understand at least some of what they said if they could learn each other's names and then find one another through the negative realm. Rig waited outside my ship while I checked the controls.
We removed that thing that was intercepting signals as they came in, Rig said. We thought it might help Jorgen not to be susceptible to cytonic interference.
No, my ship doesn't block cytonic interference, I said. I think what you removed was an encryption device, but I won't need that today anyway.
Oh,
Rig said. He looked embarrassed, but he didn't need to be. He'd done a good job getting my ship back in flying condition from what I could tell. Thank you for fixing this for me, I said.
Of course, Rig said. I'm confident about the damage repairs. Those were all completed ages ago. All I did last night was finish the reassembly. You should be fine in the air.
He backed off, and I engaged my acclivity ring, lifting off the landing bay floor and flying out to meet the others in formation around Jorgen. I let one of the humans hit me with their light lance and hyperjump me beyond the autofire with the Independence pilots. I didn't know how much hyperjumping I was going to have to do, and I wanted to keep the number of jumps to a minimum when I could. Jorgen jumped us way out, giving the autofire a wider berth than we probably needed. I checked the frequency Rinnakeen had been broadcasting from. His program had begun, and I could hear him opining about how the rift between our factions was the real problem for Redawn. According to my ship's frequency locator, the signal was coming from the council tree, exactly as expected. That was good. I reached out with my cytonic senses, searching for Quillan, and found him closing on our location. I scrambled with my radio, trying to find the flight's general channel to let Jorgen know, but by the time I found it, he was already giving the flights the bearing of the incoming enemy.
We're going to slow to 0.5 mag, he said, and fly toward tower, away from the enemy.
The ships immediately followed his order. By putting our people on the opposite side of the platform from Quillan, Jorgen ensured that Quillan would have to pass around the platform to get to them. Jorgen would be able to fire the hyperweapon at him without worrying about clipping his own people in the blast. The Independence flight joined us as we flew away from the platform toward the tree, slow enough that Quillan would easily catch us. He had to know we were up to something, but he wouldn't know what.
Rig, Jorgen said. Do you have visual on the enemy flight?
I do,
Rig said. They are closing on the platform.
Flying in the opposite direction, I couldn't see the incoming ships, which Quillan must have called in from the reinforcements at the council tree, except on my sensor screen. But I felt the disturbance rippling through the negative realm as Jorgen contacted Boomslug in the platform control room and directed him to fire on the flight as they skirted the other side of the platform. I scanned radio channels, catching bits of their transmissions as pilots screamed and swore and called their intentions to eject. I didn't know if they all made it, but as Jorgen directed us to pivot around and fly below the platform again, I did see several pilots descending through the miasma with parachutes. Two of the ships collided with the far side of the platform. A few more ships cut toward us, having avoided the mind blades. Unfortunately, Quillan was among them.
Alanik, he said in my mind, what are you doing?
If this distraction was going to work, Quillan had to believe I meant business. I'm doing what has to be done. Look what that did to your flight. What do you think it will do to your people on Tower?
You've lost your mind,
Quillan sent back. That was good. I needed him to believe that I had.
FM, Sentry, take point. Engage the enemy ships. T-Stall, Catnip, Netter, back them up.
Five ships shot out in front of us, meeting with the enemy ships as they skirted around the platform outside the auto-fire zone. A number of Independence ships joined them. I reached into the negative realm, checking on the council tree. Nearly a quarter of the way around the planet, I could feel the dead space fading away. The area around the council tree no longer covered by cytonic inhibitors. Quillan had called in the other cytonics, realizing that the only way to stop the platform was to inhibit our ability to use cytonics in the area or lay down a concussion field. Jerkface, I said over the radio. We are a go.
Copy, Jorgen replied. Do it. Don't forget about me,
Arturo said. He flew close on my wing, like he wanted to be sure I remembered he was tagging along. As if I could forget. When I reached out for Naga's mind, I realized that Chubbs had snuggled around my waist and fallen asleep. In a starfighter. In the middle of a battle. I was glad someone had been able to find some peace. It wasn't going to be Naga, as I reached out for its mind, giving it cytonic coordinates near the council tree, but far enough away we wouldn't be immediately spotted. Tell Naga to go, I said to Arturo over the radio.
Naga, go, he said.
Arturo's ship blinked out of existence, and I followed. Chapter 19. We passed through the negative realm and back into our reality, staring out into the purple darkness of the night sky. There were no stars peeking through the miasma, not this deep, merely a cloudy darkness with patches of violet and red, like someone had put a multicolored blanket over the sun. It was nearly dawn on this part of the planet. The council tree stood out in the distance, the walkway lights of the city pathways blinking through the reddish cloud between us.
Stars. I'm never going to get used to how strange this is, Arturo said over the radio.
It's beautiful, isn't it? I said.
So scudding beautiful, he agreed. They make our trees look like infants. They used to seem impressive to me. Most of our plants grow in vats.
I reached out toward the council tree. Quillan would know I'd disappeared, of course. He'd guess what I was doing. But the other cytonics were moving away from us now in the direction of Tower. They'd boarded a ship in a hurry. Quillan was worried. He was right to be. I'd left a group of humans with a superweapon outside one of Redon's major population centers. The other cytonics are leaving, I said. Do you think Jerkface will keep his promise not to fire on the tree? I was proud I remembered to use the call sign over the radio, though I still didn't quite understand the purpose.
He will, Arturo said, without hesitation. Do you worry he won't?
Yes, I did, but admitting it felt like weakness.
Your call sign, I said. It's Amphi?
Amphisbina,
he said. My pin didn't translate it. What does that mean?
It's a dragon from old Earth mythology. I picked it because it's fearsome and it flies.
If I need a call sign, I'd like something that flies, I said. That seems logical.
It doesn't have to be something logical, he said. It can be anything you want.
That seemed more difficult, though, to pick from anything. We don't have creatures that fly on Redon. They wouldn't survive the miasma.
Yeah, well, we never had real dragons either. There are other things that fly, though, real or not, like eagles or angels.
I've heard of those, I said. Flying humans from your old religions. When my people first met yours through the negative realm, some of them thought we were angels. Others thought we might be devils. Like angels, but evil, right?
That's true. But you're more of an angel, though, right? I don't like thinking we've made a deal with the devil.
He said it jokingly, but it was the kind of joke that had the bite of truth to it. An angel, then, I said. Definitely.
It suits you, he said. An angel with a great big sword, coming down to exact justice.
I wasn't sure that's what I was, but the idea of wielding a sword of justice against the superiority was appealing, so long as it was a metaphorical one. I had no desire to get into an actual fight with such a crude weapon. One moment, I said. I'm going to check on Rinnakeen. I tuned my radio to the channel he was broadcasting from. He was still there, talking with one of the Unity orators about the trade benefits of capitulating to the superiority. I ran the signal through my ship's location device, then switched to my channel with Arturo. Rinnakeen is still broadcasting from the council tree, I said. The signal is coming from the area of his old residence. His primary residence is far from here, but he has a place where he stayed when he was on the council, before he lost the election.
What are we flying into? Arturo asked. Do they have gun emplacements? Other defenses?
No, I said. Putting weapons around the government headquarters would be far too aggressive. They're trying to convince the superiority that we're peaceful, and Quillan and the others will have taken most of the in-residence air force with them as well.
Finally, the superiority has done us a favor, Arturo said. I'll take it. Are we flying in or hyperjumping?
We shouldn't get any closer in our ships, I said. Let's stop our ships and leave them. We can leave Chubbs behind as well. That way we'll both be able to get back here if something goes wrong.
Last time I hyperjumped out of my ship, I left it on the other side of the universe, Arturo said. But you're the flight leader on this mission, and I'd rather your friends down there didn't see us coming.
Agreed, I said, reaching out to Naga. I wound my way through the negative space to the council building, forming the coordinates in my mind. I'd traveled via hyperjump to Rinnakeen's residence before, so I knew exactly where I was going. And then I called Naga to follow as I jumped. The eyes fixed on me, and I could feel their ire, like they wanted to swat me out of the sky. That was two hyperjumps in quick succession. I hoped I wouldn't have to make many more. We emerged in Rinnakeen's study, next to the wide barkwood table. The room looked pristine, nothing like the mess it had been when Rinnakeen was working in here regularly. The shelves were empty, the table polished and clear. Through the arched doorway, I could hear a voice. I grabbed Arturo by the arm and pulled him behind the door. Naga squirmed in her sling, trying to twist around to look up at me.
Thank you, Cecil, Rinnakeen was saying. You don't need to return for the tray. I'll hold it until morning. Of course, another voice responded. If you need anything, don't hesitate to call.
Rinnakeen was no longer broadcasting. I scowled. He was being treated like a guest, not a prisoner. Maybe Nana Lise wanted to keep that a secret from the staff as well, and Rinnakeen had decided to go along with it. But that seemed so spineless. Rinnakeen wasn't the type to back down, even if they were threatening his family. I heard the clicking of a spoon in a metal-lined cup. Rinnakeen was apparently taking tea. Behind me, Arturo was silent, but I could feel his breath against my neck. Every part of me was suddenly aware of him, standing so near. Goosebumps broke out over my skin.
"How do you want to play this?"
Arturo whispered. The pin read his volume, translating his words so softly I could barely hear them. The spoon clicked against a table, followed by silence. "Wait here," I whispered back. Arturo nodded. I was glad he didn't feel the need to keep me in sight every second. I didn't need him tending me like a child. But I hesitated. He could jump away in a moment and leave me behind. I could follow, of course. I could jump right back to their planet and give them a piece of my mind, so it wasn't being left behind that frightened me. It was losing their trust, I realized. It was being alone. It was discovering that I always had been.
"You ready?"
Arturo asked. He was watching me quizzically, like he didn't understand why I was hesitating. "You'll be right here," I said. He looked surprised.
"Yes,"
he whispered, his voice barely a breath.
"I'll be right here if you need me."
I was a cytonic. With the inhibitor gone, I was in power here. I didn't need some human watching my back. But somehow, it made me feel better anyway. "Okay," I said. And I stepped around the door and into the hallway beyond. The corridor opened up into Rinnakeen's living space. It wasn't the most lavish place. Rinnakeen preferred function over ostentation. Rinnakeen sat on a cushioned chair formed with branches that twined together high above his head. He had a wooden cup pressed to his lips and looked up at me in surprise as I approached. I glanced around. If Rinnakeen was secretly a prisoner, they might be recording and monitoring him rather than posting obvious guards. I put a finger to my ear. "Are they listening?" I mouthed. Rinnakeen shook his head and set down his cup.
"We're safe here," he said. "Alanik, I'm so glad you've come back."
"I can take you out of here," I said. "I got rid of the other cytonics."
"It isn't safe," Rinnakeen said. "Alanik, I've learned so much since I've been here. There isn't time to explain, but you're in terrible danger."
"Obviously, we were both in danger. You need to come with me," I said. "I'll explain everything, but let me take you out of here before the superiority realizes I'm here."
"That's just it," Rinnakeen said. "You have to come with me. I have a ship we can use. I'll tell you everything on the way."
I blinked at him. Had he used the exact line on me that I'd used on him? And why didn't he seem at all concerned about whether or not I'd rescued his family? "I really think we should have this conversation somewhere else."
"Of course. As I said, I have a ship."
Hairs rose on the back of my neck. Something was wrong here. "Rinnakeen," I said. "Where did I go when I left?"
"What?"
Rinnakeen said. "Where did I go?" I asked. "When I left here. Where did you tell me to go?"
"You went to get fighters, and you brought them to rescue our allies at Hollow," he said. "I heard all about it. You've done very well."
"Okay," I said. "Where'd I get the allies, Rinnakeen?"
"Alanik," Rinnakeen said. "Time is of the essence."
"I know," I said. "So tell me where you told me to go when we last spoke." Rinnakeen sighed, and then he moved one of his hands to a device on his wrist. I took a step back, afraid it might be a weapon. But he simply depressed a button. My cytonic senses abruptly stopped, like I'd gone instantly blind. I was lost, alone, isolated, unable to reach out for the company of the endlessness of everything. Rinnakeen had a Tanix box here somewhere. He'd activated a cytonic inhibitor. You're not Rinna Keen, I said, mostly for the benefit of Arturo. The person who was not Rinna Keen smiled. Chapter 20. You're not Rinna Keen, but you look just like him, I said. How are you doing that? He smiled at me again and leaned back in his chair, like he wasn't worried at all about what I was going to do next. That meant he probably had backup on the way, perhaps alerted by the inhibitor or by another button on his wristband. From there, they'd be able to drag me off to their ship, and then to the Superiority. I hoped Arturo would stay silent. If they didn't find him, at least he and Naga would be able to return to the platform if I didn't find a way out of this. I didn't expect them to mount a rescue, but at least... A crash sounded from the office behind me, and I closed my eyes. Not Rinna Keen stood.
Did you bring someone with you?
He asked. He edged around me, keeping his back to the wall as he moved down the hallway so as not to turn it on me or the source of the noise. I should try to make a run for it, but I couldn't leave Arturo to be taken. I followed Not Rinna Keen down the hall. Maybe we could surround him. Maybe we could... Not Rinna Keen turned into the doorway to the office, where little bits of a piece of one of Rinna Keen's decorative vases lay in fragments on the floor. Not Rinna Keen had barely taken a step into the room when he took a punch to his knee and an elbow to his gut and went flying onto his backside on the hallway floor. I moved toward him to kick him while he was down, but Not Rinna Keen lifted his hands in surrender.
Human! So aggressive! Stop! Please!
Arturo stood in the doorway, shaking his hand.
Ouch! He said. That scutting hurt! How did Spencer make it look so easy?
Easy,
Naga added. Not Rinna Keen tried to scramble to his feet, but Arturo raised his fist, and he sank to the ground again, protecting his face. I grabbed his wrist, pulling off his bracelet. With a click of a button, the inhibitor was gone, and the universe came to life around me again, like it had suddenly burst into song. With a second, the image over Not Rinna Keen's body dissolved, revealing a Dione with bright crimson skin.
Oh, scud, Arturo said.
This time, I kicked the Dione, hard. They moaned and clutched their side.
Where is Rinna Keen?
I asked. We didn't have much time, but with the inhibitor down, we could get out much faster.
You won't find him here,
the Dione said.
They took him away not long ago.
Oh, no. I put a hand on Arturo's shoulder and sent Naga the coordinates of the cockpit of my ship in the miasma. She was either getting used to me or was very aware of the danger we were in because she went without Arturo's permission this time.
Ouch,
Arturo said. He was squished in the cargo space behind my seat in the cockpit, his head pressed against the roof.
This is not ideal.
Better than being taken by the Superiority, I said.
Taken,
Naga said from the side of my seat. Chubb sat on my dash, looking at us curiously.
Think you can return me to my ship? Arturo asked.
I gave Naga a clear picture of Arturo's cockpit. His ship had drifted away a bit, but I could still see it through my canopy, floating off to the side. Arturo and Naga disappeared, and a moment later, the ship started flying toward mine. Chubb settled on my lap.
Are you okay?
Arturo asked. I'm fine, I said. How's your hand?
It's all right, though I think my ego is bruised. Ned always said we ought to have more training in hand-to-hand combat. I guess he was right.
It did the job, I said. Superiority operatives apparently really don't like it when you punch them. I still have no idea how he managed to look like Rinna Keen. I still had the bracelet in my hand, and I set it on the floor next to my seat to be examined later.
About that, Arturo said. Spencer had a ship she found on Detritus. It had holographic technology that let her pretend to be you.
I remembered FM and Jorgen saying something about that. And the Superiority stole it?
I think they must have gotten their hands on her ship. They already knew she'd been using a hologram to look like you, so they would have been searching for it intentionally.
That was a terrifying thought. Though it was also startling to know that Spensa had technology even the Superiority didn't know about. They always seemed like they knew everything.
Poor M-Bot, Arturo said. I'm kind of surprised he didn't self-destruct or something. Spensa is going to be pissed.
She's not the only one, I said.
I'm checking on the others over the radio, Arturo said. Scud, their situation sounds hot.
It would be. We'd sent all the Cytonics Unity had to offer right at them. I hadn't heard from Jorgen. He said it was easier for him to contact me when I was near, but I hoped he could manage it even across the distance. I reached out to him now. The Unity Cytonics had reached them, but they hadn't managed to get the field up. Status report? I asked him.
We're holding out,
Jorgen said.
We've kept the Cytonics out of position so far, so they haven't been able to get up their inhibitors or that concussion thing. They're too busy not getting shot down. Did you find Rinnakeen?
Working on it. Jorgen fell silent, probably fully occupied dealing with Quillan and his people. We have to hurry and find Rinnakeen, I said. If they just left to take him to the Superiority, he could still be in transport. Let me see if I can find their ship. I closed my eyes, reaching across the miasma around the tree. It was easier to find a huge field of cytonic inhibition rather than one ship across the whole of the planet.
Angel, Arturo said, we have incoming.
I opened my eyes and scanned my proximity sensors. He was right. A contingent of ships headed right for us. Either they'd scanned and found us, or Quillan had reported our whereabouts. I needed to focus on finding the ship holding Rinnakeen. You want to take point on this one?
Gladly, Arturo said. Evasive maneuvers.
Copy, I said, mirroring Arturo's movements as he cut a path away from the incoming ships. I tried to focus on the negative realm, reaching out with my senses, canvassing the area for dead spots. There. Above the reaching branches of the tree, kilometers up in the miasma, was a tiny spot I couldn't feel, like a dead nerve on an otherwise healthy patch of skin. Found it, I said to Arturo, closer to the tree and up.
You want to take the lead now?
Arturo asked.
Yes.
I accelerated and shot out in front of him, veering sharply upward so fast that my grav caps engaged, taking the brunt of the G-forces. The incoming ships changed course a moment later, following and gaining on us.
I don't know what kind of maneuvers you're used to, Arturo said, and I'm sure we call them different things. So I'll follow you and we'll try not to get shot, okay?
Yes, that, I said. And the ships behind us came into range and started to fire. Off my left wing, Arturo rolled his ship and pulled a tight series of dodging maneuvers I'd never seen before. But I had tricks of my own. Three ships came at me, destructors all firing at once, and I cut to the side, weaving between the projectiles, and then rolled upward again, still aiming for that dead patch in the sky.
Nice, Arturo said. You're going to have to teach me that one.
Same to you, I said. The varsity leagues would die to get their hands on moves none of the other teams had seen before. Maybe that was how I was going to sell this alliance to the rest of my people. If they couldn't see the sense in saving themselves from the Superiority, they could always be counted on to want their team to win.
On your right, Arturo said.
I dodged before I saw the destructor fire, and it narrowly missed pinging my shield. We're coming up on that dead spot, I said. There it was. The ship Quillan had used to take Rinnakeen, an Urdale ship with a cytonic inhibitor inside. They'll have Tanix in there, I said to Chubbs. Should we collect you some new friends?
Friends,
Chubbs said, hugging my stomach like he was enjoying the warmth. If the Tanix couldn't hyperjump out of those boxes, he wouldn't be able to go in and get them anyway. We were going to have to disable the ship and then grab it with my light hook to pull it in. The ships behind us must have alerted it, though, because it was flying away at high speed. "Accelerating," I said to Arturo.
"Right behind you,"
Arturo said, and we shot off after the escaping ship, the others close on our tails. I admired the way Arturo somehow managed to pull the most elaborate maneuvers, all while staying near enough to back me up when it got too hot. I was every bit as good at evasive flying as he was, maybe better. But Arturo was something I'd never been, a real team player. I closed in on the ship with the cytonic inhibitor, matching its speed. "I need to be sure he's in there," I said. "I'm going in close."
"I'll cover you," Arturo said,
and he did, blasting one of the ships on my tail with his destructors. I cut a path toward the ship, pulling even with its left wing. The miasma turned my canopy into a blur of violet, but I held my ship steady. At this close range and at such high speed, it would be easy to collide and knock us both out of the sky. The ship was much larger than mine, with a wider canopy. There, in the pilot seat, was another Dione, recognizable by the bright blue skin under their flight helmet. I pulled farther forward as destructor fire rained over us. The ships behind us were apparently more interested in taking me down than they were worried about hitting their allies. The larger ship cut to the side, trying to evade me. But not before I caught a glimpse into the hold, where a second Dione sat next to Rinnekeen, who was bound and gagged. "He's there," I said to Arturo. I followed as the ship turned a wheel roll to try to shake me. I stayed firm on its tail.
"Orders?"
Arturo asked. "Hang on," I said. And I fired my light hook at the spinning ship, trying to grab it. My hook connected, but the other ship's momentum pulled me to the side, right into a line of destructor fire. My shield took a hit, and I felt the impact in my bones.
"Angel," Arturo said. "I've got three on my tail. I'm going to have to pull away to shake them."
"Do it," I said.
"You've got more on you," he said. "Watch out."
The destructor fire continued, and I was forced to drop my light hook and take a dive beneath the Dione's ship to avoid losing my shield.
"I lost them," I said to Arturo. "Stay alive," Arturo said.
I had to ground that ship, but I couldn't do that way out here, away from the trees, and certainly not with so many ships on our tail. "I'm going to take them on," I said.
"Don't let them get away with Rinnekeen."
And I pulled one of my favorite maneuvers from the junior leagues, a tight turn where my ship pivoted and my grav caps groaned and the weight of the universe seemed to bear down on my body. And then it lifted, and I opened fire right in the faces of the enemy ships. They dodged to the side, but I pegged the shield of one and then caught another in a long burst of fire. It rolled, trying to avoid me, but its thrusters went up in smoke. And then the ship exploded, blooming like an opening flower. The ship started to drop, beginning an uncontrolled descent, still flying forward with the force of its momentum. The pilot didn't eject. I'd killed them.
"On your right," Arturo said, and he opened fire, driving back two ships. "Rinnekeen's ship is just ahead."
"Right. Focus." I gripped the control sphere much tighter than I'd been trained to do, trying to ignore the panic rising in my throat. I killed someone. They were alive before, and now they were dead. I did that. Me.
"There it is," Arturo said.
As if he sensed my hesitation, he flew past me, chasing after the ship.
"Plan?"
Bile rose in my throat. I had to get out of here. I had to get out of the sky before. Destructor fire shot over my left wing and I startled. I slammed forward with my thrusters, picking up speed, joining Arturo. That was enough. I had to end it now. I gained on the ship holding Rinnekeen and shot at it again with my light hook, which connected, wrapping around the fuselage. With my light hook in place, I did the only thing I could think of to do. I reached into the negative realm, called to Naga behind me, and pulled. Chapter 21. We ripped out of the negative realm and skidded across the metal surface of Wandering Leaf. Our momentum died abruptly in the negative realm, but our thrusters propelled us forward anew as we emerged again. I cut their power, keeping my eyes on the ship that held Rinnakeen as it skidded toward the base of one of the auto turrets and crashed to a stop. My ship skidded a bit, grinding the landing gear against the metal of the platform, but it didn't sustain too much damage. I scrambled out, tucking Chubbs under my arm in case I needed to hyperjump. I didn't know what the Dione's would do with Rinnakeen, but I guessed if they were his guards, they'd be less averse to violence than not Rinnakeen had been. Sure enough, the canopy opened, and one of the Dione's pointed a pistol at me and fired. I lunged away behind the wing of their ship. They weren't going to mess around, so neither would I. I grabbed coordinates for the spot right behind the Dione's seat and sent them to Chubbs. We appeared directly behind the Dione with the gun and right in front of the other very surprised Dione, who let out a shriek. Arturo's ship had slid farther than mine, and he climbed out and raced toward us. But before he could arrive, I put a hand on each Dione and sent Chubbs the coordinates I knew best. We appeared moments later in the living area in my home on Spindle. Several Unity operatives looked up at me from where they were playing a card game. They could do nothing but watch as I shoved both Dione's forward and then slipped into the negative realm again, directing Chubbs to bring us both back to the surface of Wandering Leaf. I ducked into the hangar to find Arturo staring at me wide-eyed. His voice was muffled by his helmet, but still audible.
I was going to try to punch them again.
Thank the wind it didn't come to that, I said, and climbed into the back of the ship, searching for Rinnakeen. The oxygen generators were still working in here, so thankfully, he hadn't gotten a whiff of the miasma. Rinnakeen looked up at me in shock, though he must have assumed I was the one chasing down his ship. One side of his head was red and swelling, possibly from the impact on landing. I grabbed the gag and pulled it off of his mouth. Tell me something so I know it's really you, I said.
Our first lesson in cytonics, Rinnakeen said. I tried to teach you to meditate, and you told me you thought it was a waste of time.
That was true. I still got impatient with it, but now at least I saw the purpose behind it. Rinnakeen looked over my shoulder at Arturo.
Did you do it? Did you truly make an alliance with the humans?
I'm working on it, I said. Come on, we need to go check on them. I helped him forward and untied his wrists. He was favoring one of his arms, though I didn't know if that was from the impact or rough handling by his captors. Arturo stepped to his other side, helping me guide him through the hangar and down the tunnels toward the control room. As we passed beneath the skylights, I scanned the sky for ships, but it was too dark for me to see them. As we neared the control room, the platform shuddered, and the miasma parted off to the side, the mind blade weapon slicing the miasma into ribbons. Rinnakeen stared in the direction of the fire.
I think I've missed a few things.
You have, I told him. There was someone pretending to be you, making speeches about how you were joining the cause of progress.
That I did know, Rinnakeen said. My captors played the broadcasts for me. That was unpleasant to listen to.
I don't have time to explain everything, I said as we reached the control room door. I need to get out there and help the humans.
You're back,
Rig said, turning from the main control panel to look at us with surprise.
This is Rinnakeen, Arturo said, helping him inside.
Rinnakeen slid to the floor next to one of the defense system boxes, holding his arm.
Jerkface, Rig said into his headset. Alanik's mission was a success. Good to hear, Jorgen said over the radio. Way to go, Alanik,
I could hear Ned say.
Did anyone follow you? Rig asked.
No, Arturo said. Alanik took care of them.